This is the McKinsey Podcast, where we help you make sense out of our world's toughest business challenges.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lucia Raheli.
And I'm Roberta Fasaro. How involved are CMOs in C-suite decision-making? Well, not nearly enough, says McKinsey partner Robert Tass.
I think this is one of the troubling things that we saw is that the CMOs are being more moved to being executors of the strategy than helping create the strategy. But where we see it work really well, they're at that table doing both.
Robert joins me to talk about how organizations thrive when chief marketing officers work with their CEOs, not for them.
After, does your mind ever wander during a video call? You're not alone. We'll hear tips on how to keep folks engaged and create better remote meetings from Karen M. Reed. She wrote Suddenly Virtual, Making Remote Meetings Work, in an excerpt from our author talk series.
Robert, McKinsey did a survey with input from the Association of National Advertisers, and it looked at the relationship between CEOs and their chief marketing officers. Why did the research focus on this particular C-suite relationship?
Anytime you have a CEO driving strategy of a business, having its functional leaders have a seat at the table is foundational, and spent a lot of time really trying to dig and understand where the issues were and what's going on in that CEO relationship.
According to the data, at a kind of a big picture level, what sort of value do CEOs place on marketing?
Well, you know, this is what's interesting. I think that we see the companies that are doing it right are seeing 2.5 times more likely to be growing greater than 5%. I think what we're seeing, though, is that the challenges that CEOs and CMOs have falls into a few buckets. The first bucket being the ability to define the role of marketing within one strategy. The second is understanding the levers of modern marketing capabilities. And then third, which is an age-old problem, is how we measure impact. How do we tie our marketing activities to business outcomes?
According to the data, do CEOs and CMOs tend to have the same vision for the role that marketing should play in the company?
Unfortunately, what we saw was that 90% of CEOs think they know what marketing is for them. However, only 50% of the CMOs see the same connection. So that means almost over 50% of the CMOs have a different view of the marketing priorities for that organization.
Robert, in the companies that you researched, how defined is this C-level marketing role?
I think this is one of the things that we're seeing across the industry is that there's lots of titles and changes in the definition of marketing. We're seeing new roles like the chief growth officer, the chief digital officer, the chief customer officer, and I can go on. We've actually seen the traditional 4 P's of marketing being fragmented across multiple roles in the organization. And this has created a challenge.
Robert, can you remind us what the 4 P's are again?
Of course. It's product, price, place, and promotion. I think this is our standard Procter & Gamble definition of the 4 P's. And it's now been moved into different parts of the organization, which some of it is good. I think we believe that you still need that aggregator who connects the dots and is that chief customer advocate across the organization to make sure that the 4 P's are working together synergistically. We also looked at the official term of CMO. Less than 40% of the Fortune 500 actually have a CMO or even a customer officer at the C-suite table. And that's a worrying sign.
There's the evolution of roles, but it also feels like there's this evolution of technology, right, that gives CMOs access to lots more data. But our survey revealed that there's this kind of disconnect between linking the data analytics to the business impact on the other end. So where's the disconnect coming from?
Well, the CEO has less marketing pedigree than ever before. You know, less than 10% of CEOs have ever done anything in their careers around marketing. So that's one. Two is the dramatic acceleration of digital and digital technology in the world of marketing. We're no longer judging marketing by television commercials. There's a whole slew of different components to think through. And then third is that data piece that you hinted at, which is just these customer signals now are everywhere. And it's incumbent upon us as marketers to interpret them and feed them back to our organization in a way that we don't talk about data, but we talk about insights and being able to connect that dots. And then finally, we now need to reimagine how we actually engage with customers, not just talk to them with a commercial, but actually engage with them with content, with digital tools. Not everyone's going to be on TikTok. Well, maybe they are, but the reality is that between YouTube and TikTok and X and Meta and all these different things, you've got to figure out how to make them work. And that means learning. You've got to become data curious. You've got to be a somebody who's always looking to figure out how to serve that customer better and better. I think that's a new capability that every company needs to really embrace. And I think that's one of the big unlocks. So as we come up with how we measure marketing, so instead of the CEO or CFO wanting to cut it, they need to understand the measurement systems in place to understand what does it mean when I cut it? Or what does it mean when I invest in it? And how do we tie those activities to outcomes? So you need to have a very robust measurement system that includes understanding your brand, understanding how your customers think of you with that brand proposition, what level of fidelity they give you credit for, competitive set. That's where the brand scores are really helpful. But then you need an econometric model to connect all the different channels that you have and how you connect the dots and how you're spending your money, not just on video, not just on content or on search and things like that, but how it all works together to help drive the results you want. And then that third lever, which I just hinted at, which is test, 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 incrementality testing. You've got to do some meaningful tests and holdouts to really see how your marketing is doing to drive those outcomes. And then finally, we have our own channel metrics where we get to see, you know, what they're really doing on my website and places that I control and put all those things together to lead the growth strategies of our companies.
And there's probably also this sense that even if you've mastered one technology or one approach, then there's just another one on its heels and you have to keep up.
A fabulous point, because I think lots of companies choose the promotion lever, and we can talk about the companies in that space. But I think the true marketers that do all of it together make really good choices on how to use the top levers for their customers to bring their brand proposition to life.
How are CMOs starting to use data differently?
The promise of one-to-one marketing on the internet is not new. It's been around for 25 plus years now, but you're seeing it. You're actually seeing brands that are using personalization technology to help make sure the right message reached the right person at the right time. If I'm in the cosmetics business like Sephora, I am now being, well, not me, but people are being targeted based on their preferences, what they like, what color hair they have, how they engage with that brand and how they want to be communicated to. And it's changing the way we engage customers across the full journey.
Looking back at the data in the report, how often are CMOs included in C-suite decision making?
You know, sadly, not enough. And I think this is one of the troubling things that we saw is that the CMOs are being more moved to being executors of the strategy than helping create the strategy. But where we see it work really well, they're at that table doing both. And they have a voice in it. They have a voice in shaping it. And those are the good ones. Those are the ones where you can clearly see that the CEO and CMO are locked into driving the business and really delivering those marketing activities that drive those outcomes that everybody can understand and relate to.
So the research lays out a blueprint for how to bring CEOs and CMOs closer. CEOs need to define the role of the CMO as a growth unifier. Can you describe what that means, you know, based on company needs? What does it mean to be a growth unifier if you're the typical CMO?
This is my favorite one because I think this is what every company needs. They need an executive to remove friction for their customers. We have to stop operating like our org chart. We need to operate how the customer wants. And I view that chief customer advocate, it's a term that I use a lot because it is that person's role to go across the company to advocate, to make it easier for the customer to do business with you. It is the person that is using customer insights. They're fighting for the different segments that you might support, because not all customers are the same, but understanding how to serve the customers efficiently and elegantly across their products and their different channels is foundational to any successful business.
How comfortable do you think CMOs are with contextualizing themselves or thinking of themselves as growth unifiers?
The good news is I think some of them are very comfortable, and you can see it in the way they operate, the way they navigate this entire C-suite, the way they advocate for the customer, the way they use data, the way they use new technology. The key message that I tell all CMOs is they need to take the business strategy and fit it with their customer needs and put the two together. And the final thing in it is they need to be accountable for real business metrics and be able to connect the dots. I think that's the most important piece that I see.
I did have a question about the CEO not necessarily having the deepest marketing background and how that can be one of the pain points that we identified. And I'm curious how the CMO can help bring the CEO up to speed in that way without stepping on toes.
I think this is one of those behaviors that we see the great ones do. This is the exercise of taking your CEO, your C-suite, and introducing them to the innovation that's rapidly changing our world. I have great examples of CMOs taking their entire executive team to CES or to Silicon Valley or to leading examples of what great looks like in terms of seeing other companies that are doing it right and exposing their leadership team to the art of the possible. And I think that's an ongoing effort. The great ones are always looking at ways to learn, and they're just curious in nature.
What was the most surprising finding from the report for you?
I'm a marketing operator at heart. I've been a chief growth officer, a chief marketing officer, and sat in the chair. It was hard to see the disconnect. It was hard to see that my bosses don't understand and don't view the priority of marketing the same way I would as a CMO. I think that was candidly stunning to me. I think it's more important than ever to make sure we understand how to take the marketing activities to drive those business outcomes, and that my CEO is a believer, a champion for that. Same with my CFO, which is another thing we saw in the report that we think is a great best practice. When we see the finance team buying into the marketing measurement system, it really works well. And that's another thing we talk to CMOs a lot about, is making the CFO your BFF. But, you know, sadly, we still have work to do to get there.
How has marketing itself changed over, say, the past 20 years?
Marketing has changed so dramatically over the last 10, 15 years. It's crazy. Everybody thinks back to the Mad Men era of, you know, we had a television commercial and we had three networks that reached almost all of the United States as an example. And we no longer live in that world. We now have these amazing little devices in our pockets that are always on and always in our possession. I think there's two things that are just going to be real. Like, this is ever changing. It's not going to be like, oh, you got it now and we're done. It's something that's constantly evolving, which also adds a new level of fidelity that marketers and companies need to do, which means they need to continually test. They need to learn what works for them and their customers. The way my wife and I shop are very different. You know, she loves information. She wants to see the reviews. She wants to go to a website 10, 15 times before she buys. I want to press that button and have that thing show up tomorrow. And that's the beauty of marketing today, is that we can serve both of them really well, but we have to adapt our marketing and understand our customers and to use the technology at our disposal to make both of those experiences amazing. We've seen studies, and McKinsey's done studies in the past that, you know, especially in hard times, marketing is usually the first thing to get cut. And we see the successful companies that actually invest are the ones that invest in marketing and pull away. Their stock prices, you know, 2-3 years after a down dip are the ones that are accelerating because they've invested and unlocked that growth lever within their organization.
Right.
Cannot be that black box anymore. We need to be able to transparently and actually demonstrate how it works and how a dollar spent here equals value there. Now, I know the crutch is immediately short-term focus on that dollar, but understanding how the dollars over time all work together to drive the results that are going to be sustainable and profitable and drive impact to the business is really critical to get that C-suite on the same page.
Robert, thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Next up, how to make the most of your remote meetings with author Karen M. Reed.
There are a lot of best practices for making meetings really effective. Bad habits are exacerbated in a virtual setting. A lot of times video calls do not need to happen if they are simply a matter of checking a point. There is this overwhelming use of video meetings as the default. That's what is leading to this Zoom fatigue. What we have found is that the most effective ones are those that are shorter and are purpose-driven. Rather than having an agenda of 10 items, think about having an agenda of 2 items and then maybe a 20-minute meeting as opposed to a 2-hour meeting, because you really have to understand the limits of endurance and attention span. First of all, consider whether it should be a video call at all. And if the answer is yes, then make sure that you put it within the proper time frame. Don't let your calendar decide by default how long your meeting is going to be. If you can get the business done in 20 minutes, schedule a 20-minute call. Because a lot of times we have these back-to-back-to-back video meetings, and there's no time left to actually get the work done or to have that moment of task switching where you kind of download what just happened and then prepare for the next call. It's also important to determine who should be in the meeting. So the sweet spot for any productive discussion is actually 5 to 7 people. But if you have more than 7 people in a virtual meeting and you're trying to have a productive dialogue, it's very unwieldy. All trends indicate that we will be in a hybrid situation for the foreseeable future. So what that does to meetings is you have to be able to figure out how to handle a hybrid meeting where you have 3 people in a co-located conference room here, and then 5 people who are joining on an individual webcam. And the challenge for the meeting leader is to figure out how to get everybody to talk to each other, not just their own particular network. So there's a lot of burden upon the meeting leader to be able to get even participation across the board. And so what you might consider is, rather than having the meeting leader also be the facilitator, consider possibly having an extra role, have somebody come in purely as the facilitator, somebody who does not have a stake in the outcome of the meeting, who can simply ensure that everybody's voice is heard. Proactive facilitation, I think, is critical in any virtual meeting because there's a lot of stilted and stunted conversation because people don't know when it's their turn to talk. You can look for nonverbal cues that might indicate that somebody has something to say. So for example, if somebody leans towards the camera, that usually is indication that they have something they want to add. It can be really daunting to get the gumption up to speak up. Other folks might find it much more effective and easier for them to put their participation in the form of text. So chat can actually lead to better participation across the board. The challenge is for the leader to actually take a look at that chat and be able to incorporate that into the verbal conversation that's going on as well. A lot of people have been relying upon gut feel, but we are in an age of data where you have a lot of data points that you can use to make better informed decisions.
Thanks so much for listening to the McKinsey Podcast. I'm Lucia Raheli.
And I'm Roberta Fasaro.
Find us on McKinsey.com. We'll have a transcript of this episode up shortly.
And download the McKinsey Insights app, where you can find this podcast and other helpful content updated daily.
If you enjoyed the show, we'd love for you to leave a rating and a review.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.